Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
She is Jackie McMullen, and she's on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Hi, Jackie. How are you?
How we doing, guys?
Hi, Jackie.
We are hanging in. I'm just curious your thoughts on the latest developments in the NBA and the conference calls that have happened between the commissioner and the players and some of the top players in the league and the owners as well. Just where do you think we are with the NBA situation right now as far as returning?
Well, it's funny. I was talking, or I guess I should say texting, with an NBA coach this morning, and we were both sort of wondering aloud where it is. And it feels, every day, it feels a little more optimistic. But the problem is, every day, the runway gets a little bit shorter. And, you know, this coach that I was going back and forth with this morning, both of us thought it was interesting that out of this latest report, that if a player was tested positive, that would not shut down the league. And that's new. That's something different, because I think they're just getting a better, more sophisticated understanding of how the disease is transmitted, how it can be handled. But this problem is, you still won't have that rapid response testing that everybody wants if that doesn't seem like it's going to be happening in the next few weeks. So I have surmised all along that if, in fact, there's going to be an NBA season, I don't see it starting much before July. And if that's being the case, I just don't know how you bring everybody back. I think it seems to me more and more that they are leaning towards bringing, you know, just playoff teams back.
Jackie, is it essential to draw this season to a conclusion?
I think it is, if you can. If you can, safely, and that's the big if. I think that these guys want to play. I know there are some players that have some reservations, and again, I respect and understand those from a health standpoint. But most of the players that I've spoken with are dying to get back, and that includes some of the players whose teams are out of the playoffs. They'd like a chance to get back. This is what they do. This is their livelihood. But if you're Adam Silver, you have to make it very clear to everybody, I am not doing this if it's going to be a health risk for anyone, and I'm also not doing this if it's going to make our athletes get benefits that the general public cannot get. He's been pretty strong on that, too. He doesn't want this to be an elite situation where players get preferential treatment over the thousands, hundreds of thousands of people that are still battling this disease, that some of them are still waiting to be tested. So those are two big obstacles. It doesn't mean it can't happen, but, you know, to sit here and say, oh, yeah, we're definitely on, I just don't think we're there.
Yeah, Jackie, I think the other thing, just listening to what you're saying, is I also think he doesn't want to do start-stop either, that they need that to me is a horrible scenario.
It is, and I think you're right. But that's why I thought the Adrian's report regarding the fact that if a player were to test positive, if play resumes, that would not be a death knell. That's interesting. Now, how do they handle that? How do they manage that? I haven't seen the particulars of that, but it is interesting. There's just so many variables here. The bubble seems to be the popular scenario in terms of how you try to keep tabs on all the NBA players and the people they come in contact with. Disney World, to me, has always made sense because of their layout, and they have a ton of basketball courts already down there. But I don't think that's set in stone either.
Jackie McMullen joining us from ESPN. Jackie, with the season sitting here the way it is, and the players, some of the superstar players had a conference call yesterday to talk about things, Was that a matter of them just wanting to get on the same page and maybe bring the other working class players along with them? Or what was the point of those guys actually trying to get on the same page with something? I'm still a little confused as to what exact role they might play in this, other than maybe trying to convince everybody to get on board and make this thing happen.
Well, I would say this. Even if they do play again this year, somebody's going to lose a lot of money. And it's not going to just be the owners. The players are going to lose a lot of money. And that, to me, is what I'm watching closely. Because of the force majeure, I say it wrong every time. Forgive me. the pandemic, there's revenue that's just not going to be recouped. That's stating the obvious. And so, will they reopen the collective bargaining agreement? Will they renegotiate the split for players and owners? My answer is probably yes. And I think if you're a player and a player rep and a player in the Players Association of some note, I want to know more about that, because everybody's going to lose money. Everybody.
Yeah. Jackie, I thought it was Chris Haynes also had a story about talking about the players who were in that conference call yesterday, and in the story it just said Adam Silver stated that he couldn't guarantee the safety of the players if play resumed in a city where they could be quarantined, but assured them the league would do everything in its power to make the safest conditions possible, sources said. And then the next line is, it didn't sit well with some of the players, with a vaccine not expected for the next 2 years. I mean, there's got to be some legal ramifications on this thing, too, that Adam Silver would be very nervous about, that if they walk into a campus setting, the way they keep calling it, you walk into a campus setting, they say to everybody, here's the deal, if somebody gets it, we're going to keep going on. But if somebody gets sick or really sick, now the NBA, is the NBA going to be on the hook for something that happens that could be, I don't want to say tragic because I really don't want to go down that road, but that's a reality here that could happen.
Right, and that's what I think Adam Silver's been very clear on that. He is not going to put, if he thinks, I mean, there's obviously always going to be a little bit of risk, but if it's anything significant, Adam Silver's not going to sign off on it. He understands that it just may be possible that it can't happen this year. And the other thing that we hear over and over when we talk to all these folks is, yes, of course they would like to have a champion this year. They'd like to finish out the season. They'd like to resume play. But at some point, it starts to bleed into next season. And they don't want to have this affect two seasons, if at all possible. So there's just going to be a point at some time where if you can't get it done by a certain date, it's going to bleed into what goes on in 2021. And that they don't want that to happen either. And listen, guys, we're talking about such an uncertain future. I mean, was it the governor? I think we were the mayor of Los Angeles that said he doesn't think there'll be live events in California till 2021. So this is the world we're dealing with here. This is obviously bigger than sports.
Jackie, the first comment you made, I thought you summed it up really, really well when you said, but that runway gets shorter every day. We heard Adam Silver reports that he'd said, 2 to 4 weeks, we hope to have some kind of a decision. You pretty much have to make a call within the next month, don't you?
I think so, because from what I understand in talking with players and their representatives and GMs and coaches, everybody agrees that there has to be an abbreviated training camp. You can't ask these players to come back and then 6 days later play games. Nobody will sign off on that, especially on the players' union side. I've heard 3 weeks to a month they need. They need to be guaranteed 3 weeks to a month for a training camp. So let's do the math. Let's say we have an answer by June 1st. You do 3 weeks to a month. You start playing either the very last week of June or the first week of July. You can't go. You can't push that runway much more than that.
Jackie, do you have a preference? Let's just say everything turns out okay, and they decide they want to go back. They go to a campus atmosphere. Mm-hmm. Do you have a preference on how maybe it should play out for the rest of the year? Should it just be the playoff teams? Should it be the teams that didn't make the playoffs all having a little tournament playing for the eighth seed to kind of go on? Is there a formula for you that you think, hey, that sounds good?
Well, I will say this. I have sympathy for some of the teams that are on the outside looking in, because who knows what could happen over the final, 15 games. It varies from team to team. But I do think we have a large enough sample size of the NBA season that occurred. And if that means getting a season in and getting it in safely and protecting, you know, the most people you can and exposing, I should probably say, the least amount of people that you can, I guess I reluctantly, and I do say the word reluctantly, favor, you've got to just take the teams, the top 16 teams right now and call it a day. I just think that makes the most sense.
Jackie, I've enjoyed Sorry, watching.
Cavs fans. Sorry.
Oh. That's okay. Oh, we're okay with it. We know we're done, so that's good.
Yeah. Right.
We know where they are. Jackie, I've enjoyed watching The Last Dance. I know you have as well. I've enjoyed watching you afterwards with your analysis and your thoughts on everything. I've been real impressed that we all heard Michael Jordan had the final say and, you know, had to give the okay to do this and blah, 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 because he had control over all that old video. I've been real impressed that it doesn't feel like a Michael Jordan production to me. He's been pretty open and honest.
He has been, and they've caught him in some very emotional moments. And, you know, they covered some of the things that you wouldn't think they would have. The race in North Carolina, which is, you know, one of the more controversial things. Michael was involved in the gambling, which, you know, would be hard to ignore if you want to do the totality of Michael's career and the totality of the Bulls and everything they endured. I've really enjoyed it. I've been on a little bit of a crusade to support Scottie Pippen here over the last week or so. I do feel like, you know, I don't know what everybody wants. I don't know why everyone needs another pound of flesh from Scottie Pippen. You know, he made some mistakes, no one bigger than refusing to go into that game in 94-95. They won the game anyway. He apologized immediately afterwards. He went back and played unbelievably the rest of that series. And it wasn't like that was the end of it. You know, Jordan came back and Scottie Pippen helped them win three more championships. So I guess that's the only thing where I feel like some of Scottie's worst moments have been highlighted and some of his best moments have not been. And maybe it's just because I have an affection for Scottie. I work with him a bit now on The Jump and in other ESPN venues. That's the only thing that's kind of bothered me a bit.
Is there anything that jumped out to you that you were like, I just didn't realize that that was the way it was? Like, I got to tell you, it was an epiphany here in Cleveland. The big epiphany here was the Ron Harper line saying that he wanted to cover Jordan on the shot, because I don't think any of us none of us had ever really heard that or talked about that or just, like,
well, and
just
that's been
like,
disputed.
Wow, I can't believe it, yeah.
That's been disputed, so I don't know. You know, I like Ron. I can't imagine why he would make it up, but that's been disputed by some of his other teammates. There's a lot of little things in there that I didn't know about. I mean, I guess I remember Scottie's contract thing and the decision to have the foot surgery, but I don't think we knew the ins and outs of that the way it's been described to us in this doc. I didn't know that Danny Ainge played golf with Michael Jordan the day before he dropped 63 on the Celtics. That was very revealing and actually somewhat amusing, because I'm always telling the current players, oh, you guys are all frat brothers because you all grew up in AU together. In the old days, that never happened, and here's here's a perfect example of when it did. And I actually asked Ainge about it, and he said, oh, no, it was strictly golf. He said, you know, we weren't friends. We were golf partners. Both of us were really good golfers. Not everybody else could play golf at the level we did, and I wanted to win some money off. but you know, like, I didn't know about that. I don't remember ever reading about that. There's been a lot of things like that have been kind of fun. I love the fact that his mother's the one that told him, "You will go to Nike. I don't care what you say. You will do what you. I'm telling you, you're going to go on that trip." And boy, his mom to me is one of the unsung stars of this whole documentary. Isn't she fantastic?
Yes, she is good.
Wonderful. Yeah, she's just been great. And the letter that, you know, the letters that she wrote, I just love Dolores Jordan. She's, to me, she's the six-star winner of this whole documentary.
Jackie, there's one other thing that you talked about between, you know, the game today, as you said, the AAU stuff. It doesn't seem to me, you know, because think about what's gone on in the NBA in recent years, and we in Cleveland obviously have been a part of it. It's, all right, I want to go play with other star players. You know, we've got to put together a super team. We have to do this. Didn't seem like Michael cared at all. He was going to take what he had and make it better. And that seems to be a glaring difference to me.
Well, and just player movement wasn't the same back then. It just didn't happen. You know, what most players, the majority of players, wanted to begin and end their career in one place. That was their goal. That's what Karl Malone did, and Stockton, and, you know, Bird, and Magic, and, you know, as it turns out, Kobe. That's what everybody's goal was, to begin and end your career in one place. That's certainly not the goal here in this landscape now in the 21st century. All you have to do is look at Kevin Durant and LeBron both. And I give LeBron all the credit in the world for that. He is the king of player empowerment, and these other players owe him a great debt because he's the one that said, wrestled really literally the control from the owners and said, no, I'm going to do a 2-year deal and I'm going to opt out and I'm going to look at how you're running your franchise and I'll make a decision. And that's completely different from the Bulls teams of the 90s. I mean, look at Scottie Pippen. He had no place to go. He was under contract, a bad contract, and he had no place to go. Yeah. That's just how it was.
Yeah.
Jackie, last question on this, and then just curious. Is Jerry Krause getting framed correctly on this documentary?
Well, I'd say it's a bit harsh, but it is. You know, he's his own words are the most damaging things in this, right? I will tell you this. I knew Jerry very well, covered Jerry, was around him. He was maddening, infuriating, but he could also be, you know, I think he was ultra-sensitive. He didn't look the part. He was never one of the guys. So there were plenty of reasons for these players to, to dislike him. But he was his own worst enemy. I've said this 1,000 times since this documentary started. If Jerry Krause had stood back and said, what an amazing group of players we have. They are to be commended. What a fantastic team. We are so proud of them. Then one of them, maybe even Michael Jordan, would have said, well, you also have to really give Jerry Krause a lot of credit because he put together two separate dynasties. He did a great job in the front office. If he had done that, it probably would have happened. Instead, Jerry was so busy telling us how great a job he did, he never gave anybody else a chance to say it. And I think that's what led to this very unflattering portrait, this insistence on drilling home the idea that organizations win championships. I mean, what a bunch of nonsense. Yes, it's good to have a good owner and a good GM, but my goodness, they don't play a minute of the game. Everybody knows that.
Hey, Jackie, can I ask you one more thing on that real quick? We haven't really seen, and you were through a lot of this, so you might know the answer. Why did Jerry insist that Phil was done at the end of his contract? Did he not want to pay him?
By then they had a tremendous falling out. Think about it. He plucked Phil out of the CBA, the Albany Patroons, not a well-known guy, brought him to the Bulls, groomed him as an assistant coach, put him at the feet of Tex Winter, who everyone, I love the fact that Tex is getting a lot of love and props in this. You know what I don't like is they're not talking about Johnny Bock and all the other longtime Bulls assistant who was fabulous and who the players really adored and respected. But that's neither here nor there. But I think what happened was over time, Phil got to be almost as big as the players. He was a personality. He got a ton of credit. Of course, he deserved it. And I think Jerry was like, hey, kind of like that Human League song, don't you want me, baby? I put you out and I can put you back there too kind of thing. Hmm. And that just isn't true. I mean, once again, this is, Jerry Krause said, hey, I discovered you. And my argument would be is, well, if Jerry Krause didn't find him, somebody else would have. Like Phil Jackson was going to be a great NBA coach. Jerry Krause deserves a lot of credit for discovering him and giving him a chance. But somebody would have at some point. And so their relationship by the end was very poor. In fact, I remember being there. I was working for Sports Illustrated at the time, and I went down to do a story, and I sat down with Phil in his office, and I said, what has happened with you and Jerry? What is this talk about Tim Floyd? Because there were all this talk about Tim Floyd being around the team, and why was he mentioned? And Phil said, well, Jerry's very enamored with him. And then he looked at me, and he smiled, and he said, Jerry was enamored with me once. And that was exactly what happened.
Wow.
So it was, they were barely speaking that last year. They weren't even speaking to each other.
Huh. Jackie, we always love watching it on TV, and you're outstanding. And we're both fans. So I just want to let you know that before we let you go. Jackie, thank you so much for joining us.
All right, guys. Have a wonderful afternoon. Just going to give you a little tease. I'm doing a story on one of your Cavs players for Friday. I'll let you think about it for the next couple of days. How's that?
Nice.
Have fun. Oh. I'll see you.
All right,
we'll think about
it. Thanks, Jackie. Jackie McMullen from ESPN, nice enough to join us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.